I know what power goals and personal development have. I mean, as I said here, you know, I just turned 49 a couple days ago, and
happy birthday.
You know, I look at the life that I came from, and my grandfather was 48 when he shot and killed that police officer. My mom, you know, was, you know, 15 when she had, just one generation later, because of one goal, and, you know, which led to other goals, I'm living a drastically different life. And not only am I living a drastically different life, my kids are living a drastic. Goals are not just for the person that achieves them. Goals are generational. And because of those goals, I'm going to live a better life. My kids are going to live a better life, and their kids are going to live a better life. And that's the power that we're dealing with goals and personal development. And that's why, you know, I see so many people out there that are one or two choices away from living a drastically different and better life.
You're listening to Eric Rogel Talks with Warriors, Lovers, Kings, and Heroes, where you'll hear real stories of the journey to modern manhood told by the men who lived them. Raw, real, and 100% unapologetic. And now, here is your host, Eric Rogel.
Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Eric Rogel, and this is Warriors, Lovers, Kings, and Heroes, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can find us at evergreenpodcast.com. So now, that clip that you just heard before the intro, that's a pretty powerful statement from my guest today. His name is Nelson Tressler. And it's about the impact of setting goals and pushing yourself to constantly be better. Now, we've heard this before from many of my guests, but what makes it so different coming from Nelson is he's talking about the generational impact of setting goals right now, how it won't just affect you, but it could have an impact on your kids and even your grandkids. Now, here's why that's so powerful coming from Nelson. It's because his story is one that most of us couldn't even imagine. You're going to hear him today talk about murder, rape, public court trials, extreme poverty, abuse. These are all things that tied shame to his family name growing up. These are things that made his family notorious in his small hometown. And some of these things were caused by actions of his grandfather before Nelson was even born. So he understands firsthand the generational impact of what you do now. But what's really important is that he also understands that those things don't define you, that you don't have to fall victim to those hardships. Because in his book titled The Unlucky Sperm Club, I really love that title, The Unlucky Sperm Club, Nelson talks about how he used those hardships and the shame of his family to fuel his life purpose and turn those challenges into a life complete with a loving family and a multi-million dollar business empire. And he's going to tell you the story of how he did that right now, how he set goals, how he kept a positive mindset and stayed accountable to his actions. And about the app that he developed called the I Got Smarter app, which he developed just so other people could do the same thing that he did. So I started the interview by asking Nelson about his family story. So Nelson, you have a really, really unique story of you know, not only growing up, but before you even came into the world. There was a lot of stuff going on in your life. So tell me from the beginning, you know, where you came from, your story, and then how you kind of the journey to where you are now.
Yeah. I definitely have quite the unique origin story. So my mom became pregnant with me when she was 15 years old. And while she was pregnant with me, her father, who was the local trash collector in a small town, drove into the town square. There he saw two police officers. He stuck a gun out the window and opened fire on those police officers, killing one and critically wounding another. And eventually my grandfather was captured and brought to stand trial for what he had done. He was facing the death penalty. And during his trial, my mom got up and testified to the jury that the reason that her father had shot and killed that police officer was that that police officer had raped her, and she was now pregnant with his baby, who was me.
Wow. And how old was your mom at that point when this
happened? She was 15 when she had me.
15 when she had you. So she was young when this happened to her.
Yeah.
From this cop. So what ended up happening with your grandfather in the trial?
Well, he ended up that my mom's testimony worked. The first trial ended in a hung jury. The state eventually took the death penalty off the table. And then he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, where he ended up spending the rest of his life, 40 years behind bars, leaving behind me, my mom, and the rest of his family to kind of deal in the wake of this in this small town.
Wow. How did they fare after he went to prison?
Not well. I mean, as you can imagine, living in a small town, everybody's already up in your business anyhow. Yeah, and, put this on top of that and, being that family and, your last name and all it represented and, me, what I represented, it was tough. And, believe it or not, my life didn't get any easier. Here I am, I'm born to a 15-year-old mother. Eventually, she meets a man who's just a peach of a man, come to find out, he's an alcoholic, very emotionally and physically abusive. And he eventually becomes my stepfather. And pretty much on a daily basis, he's beating either me or my mom or both.
Nelson, this is just incredible. You had this stigma, like you said, small town, here's your reputation. Everyone in town knows your story, right? Before, and that's following you along. And then you get into this abusive stepfather and all of that. So how did that affect you? Growing up, what was your sense of who you were, your circumstance? Was there a lot of, feeling about being a victim in all of this thing that you had no control over? Where were you kind of mentally and emotionally at this point?
Well, I think a blessing was that, I was ignorant that this wasn't the way everybody's life was, that everybody's family wasn't like this, that everyone's, dad didn't come home drunk and beat on him or his mom. So I think that kind of helped me. As far as the circumstances of who I was, I always felt like I was damaged goods. I was always that kid that, was getting pointed at and, the life that I was living, we were dirt poor. No food in the refrigerator poor, you switch on the lights and you were lucky if the lights actually worked because the power wasn't turned off. So it was pretty rough early on in my life.
So how old are you during this time with the stepdad and the whole thing? And
yeah, so, I think my mom met my stepdad when I was five or six. And then eventually they had four additional children in quick succession. And, one day my stepfather was walking home drunk from a bar and there was somebody else who was driving home drunk from that bar and they ended up hitting and killing him. And, here's my mom, she's lived this horrible life up to this point. Mm-hmm. And as bad as my stepfather has been, losing him pretty much left my mom with no hope. She's dropped out of school in the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And it was at this time, she has these five kids and she can't figure out how she's ever going to care for them. And it's at this time that my mom decided that she was going to commit suicide. And fortunately, she was not successful. But when she got out of the hospital, she determined that she wasn't going to be able to care for all five of us. And that's when my family got split up. And that's when I went to go live with my grandmother, who is the wife of the man who shot and killed the police officer. Mm-hmm. And I was about 10 or 11 at that time.
And what was that like when you got there and kind of got out of that situation and went to go live with grandma?
Well, okay. So my gram had 15 children. Some of them are still living at home at this time. Yeah. And because of the saint that my gram was, she was raising five or six other grandchildren at the same time. But, for the first time in my life, there was always food in the refrigerator. The lights always turned on. You always had heat. And I didn't have to worry about, my stepfather coming home and beating anybody. And I didn't have to care for my younger siblings. I didn't have to wake up and and bottle feed or change diapers. So for the first time in my life, I could really start to focus on myself. And, you know, that's when I kind of reflected on in looking at what direction my life was going.
Yeah. Well, so tell me about that reflection. So what, I mean, you're how old at this point? You're with grandma now.
Yeah. So I'm with my grandma at 10 or 11. I remember there was one instance where I was at school, and that was another thing. I mean, to this point, when I was with my mom, I had flunked the fourth grade because my mom would rather me stay home from school and help with the kids and go to school. Yeah. You know, I get placed into special ed the year after I flunk fourth grade, can't read, can't write, can't spell, come to find out I have dyslexia. And, you know, one day in seventh grade, a counselor came from Penn State University, which was just a few miles up the street. And they start talking about all the things that you need to do in order to get into college. Mm-hmm. And I kind of looked at that and I'm like, man, my life would be made. If I just got a college degree, my life would be perfect from there on out. And I started to really think about that. But, you know, when you tell yourself you're going to do something that's hard and difficult, that voice in the back of your head just starts screaming at you all the reasons you shouldn't even attempt it. And I remember thinking to myself, Nelson, you're in special ed. You can't read, you can't write, you can't spell. Of my Graham's 15 children, only two of them had ever graduated from high school. None had ever even gone to college. And I start thinking to myself, geez, I'm going to be lucky to get out of high school, let alone go to college. But, you know, I did. You know, I had nothing else to work for. And, you know, it took me four different schools, 12 years, 4 years in the Air Force. But eventually I did become that first person in my family to graduate from college.
Well, man, that's awesome. And I really congratulate you on that. I mean, that's just amazing to hear. So when was this decision? Because like you're saying, you know, the screaming in the back of the head. And now, you know, I love the title of your book. You know, the title of your book is, the, you know, The Unlucky Sperm Club, which is fantastic. And I mean, if anyone can claim, you know, victim, you know, and I always talk about people that come on and they just want to be the victim and that this all happened to me and I had no control over it. This would be that kind of story, but you overcame that. And so what I want to get into is, you know, you make this decision, I'm going to go to college. Really amazing goal, huge goal. And, you know, how old are you at the time? How did you overcome the screaming in the back of your head? I mean, to me, that's really tapping into that warrior side and just persevering no matter what. So what got you through all that in the face of everything going on around you?
Well, I think everything going on around me is what got me through it because, you know, what I realized was, is I didn't want this type of life for myself. And although I didn't have a lot of great role models growing up, you know, I lived through the hell of what my stepfather had put me and my mom through. And I knew for sure I never wanted to be like that. I never wanted to do that. So I just started to make the choices that I thought would get me as far away from where I didn't want to be. I didn't necessarily know where I wanted to go. So I just started that. And college was that one thing. I mean, in a small town, you know, there wasn't this huge industry. I mean, it was definitely, you know, blue collar town, but you know, you would see a school teacher in the store and they'd be like a celebrity, you know, that's the kind of town I was in. And college just kind of checked those boxes. And I started working towards that. The one good thing I had going for me, I was a pretty good athlete and I had one school that wanted me to come and play football for them. And because of that, they were willing to massage the admission requirements and deep tissue massage of the requirements. Yeah. You know, I was a C or B student, but because of that, I got into college and, you know, kind of started on my journey.
So tell me about this a little bit too, because, you know, you said you didn't have a whole lot of role models. You had some anti-role models is what I'm getting from this, like what you didn't want to be. It seemed like a lot of the motivation in that early time was what you didn't want. I don't want to be like these men. I don't want to be like my stepdad. I don't want to be like some of the people that are in my town. You know, I don't want to experience any of this. I don't want to not be a college graduate, all of that kind of stuff. But did you find positive role models? And a lot of times it's in sports. So, you know, being that you had played sports and were playing college sports, I mean, when did you start kind of gathering some some good role models, some male mentors around you that kind of maybe gave you the view that, you know, shit, there are some really good men out there, and this is what, you know, is going to help propel me forward.
Yeah. You know what? I was really fortunate when I was like 11 or 12 or, you know, 13 years old, I got placed into the Big Brother, Big Sister program. And one of my big brother was a college student at Penn State University. And he came down, and for the first time, you know, literally, you know, this guy looked like a movie star, and he just walked and had an aura around him that was very foreign, you know, in my town. And, you know, he treated me like an adult. And, you know, I think the best thing that he saw potential in me. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in my life, you know, an adult was really asking me what I wanted in my life and telling me that I could have anything that I wanted if I was willing to work hard enough, and seeing that potential in me. He had actually gone to school on the GI Bill. He had joined the Navy. And he told me one day, you know, Nelson, you could be a naval officer. And that just blew me away, because up to this point in my life, people were telling me how horrible I was and I was going to end up in jail and all that. And then here's this guy who really just saw that potential. And for the first time, I started to see that potential in myself.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting too, because as you're saying that, when you said he believed in you, it seems like, you know, you had this belief in yourself and you knew that this is where you wanted to go. And then finding somebody like him, the Big Brothers, Big Sisters could not be a more amazing, you know, organization. And I see what, you know, what it did for you, but he reinforced that self-belief that you had, like you said. I mean, it was that positive, inspirational feedback that allowed you at some point, and if I'm correct, let me know. Seems like that's what allowed you to say, well, okay, I know I believe this, but now I've got some people around me that believe in it too, and I can actually move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was him, and then there was also my grandma. Mm-hmm. You know, my grandma pretty much every day of my life told me, Nelson, you're going to make something out of yourself. You're going to do something with your life. And she told me that so often and believed it so thoroughly. And I loved her so much that, you know, I wanted to prove that true, you know, that she believed in me, that I was going to do everything that I could do to, you know, make that come true, you know, for her as much as for me.
Yeah. So tell me what happened once you got into college and, you know, cause you said when you were younger, that was the big goal, right? If I could just get into college, then boom, 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 things will start falling into place. What happens when you get there?
So, you know, I go there to play football and, you know, I get through my first year and I get a bill at the end of that first year for $3,500. And, I'm living with my grandma at this time. She makes $4,800 a year on Social Security. There is no way I'm ever going to be able to go back. And then that's when I look to the Air Force and look at the GI Bill. And, you know, the Air Force checked a few boxes for me. I mean, one, it showed me how I was going to pay for college. And then two, it got me out of a town where I had so much baggage and my last name meant so much. And, you know, when I joined the Air Force for the first time in my life, you know, it was so liberating to be able to say my last name and for people not to, you know, relate it back to what my grandfather had done and what my mom had testified to. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I really believed that I could do anything that I wanted to and I could be anyone that I wanted to be.
Yeah. So how was it when you get to the Air Force and you start, you know, again, I'm feeling like there's some really strong people that you're meeting along the way, college coaches, right? Sports coaches, getting into the Air Force, you know, getting the discipline of the military, having those men around you. What's the experience like in the Air Force once you get there, besides getting out of town and not having your name be a stigma anymore? What else are you experiencing there in the Air Force?
Yeah. I mean, for the first time I have discipline in my life in the Air Force. I mean, you have to do what you said you were going to do or what somebody tells you to do. You start to rely on people and understand that other people are going to do what they said they're going to do. And, you know, I didn't have very much of that growing up. It was pretty much a free for all. And you just did what you felt like doing. And the Air Force kind of showed me that that wasn't the way things we're supposed to be in. And it wasn't the way things would be if you wanted to be successful. So yeah, learned a lot of lessons in there, you know, a different mindset. I think that's where my mindset really started to change. And also realizing that, you know, hard work actually paid off, and got all that. I mean, wouldn't trade going into the Air Force for anything. I mean, that was kind of, that changed the direction of my life for sure.
Yeah. You know, I have a question about that too. Cause you know, one of the things that brought up as you were saying that was, you know, I interview a lot of men who have, you know, are military veterans, and a lot of the comments that I hear and things that come up are the love for your brother, your fellow, the guy next to you, the guy to your right and the guy to your left. And, you know, growing up for you, it seems like the beginning was a lot of self-preservation, right? It's all about survival at that point, you know, really having to tap into that warrior side, you know, survive, make sure the lights are on, you've got food, taking care of the kids that are younger than you, and then getting to your grandma's house. And, you know, a little bit of that eases, but now it's still about you. How did the Air Force, did it change your perspective? And now it wasn't just about you, you know, it's more tapping into the heart side now and feeling, are you responsible for others that are out there working together as a team, you know, maybe guiding and mentoring other men that are in the service with you? I mean, did that change perspective from me to we at that point?
Yeah, you know, I worked on the flight line, so I was working on fighter aircraft, and the pilots are depending on you to make sure that that airplane is safe and that it's going to do all the function that it's supposed to do. So yeah, that responsibility was always there. I mean, it never left you, knowing that other people were putting their lives on the line from what you were going to do. So yeah, that definitely heightened my sense of responsibility, you know, not only to me, but to the men who are going to climb in that aircraft.
Yeah. The duty to them, the commitment to them, and then theirs to you as well. I mean, that's also, here are these guys, you know, the pilots, highly trained, amazing men, and they're relying on you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, how's that feeling when you know that these guys are putting their lives in your hands?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Air Force definitely gives people a sense of worth. And that was something that I didn't really have growing up. You know, like I said, I always felt like I was damaged goods and felt like I was always a problem or an issue. Never really, you know, had that belonging that, hey, we really want you, you know, the circumstances of my birth and all of that. But, you know, in the Air Force, exactly. I mean, here I am, a 19-year-old kid working on a multi-million dollar jet, you know, they're trusting you with, and, you know, these pilots are trusting, you know, this 19-year-old to do what he's supposed to do. And they're willing to trust you and climb into that aircraft and do their job. And yeah, it's a totally different mindset.
Yeah. And I can really feel that. And it's gotta be a tremendous amount of growth there, you know, having that sense around you. So any challenges you hit when you were in the Air Force, anything, you know, else kind of pop up that really, you know, you had to really face head on?
You know what? The Air Force was eye-opening for me. I mean, one, it was the first time I was really out of my town. I got to go over to Saudi Arabia and got to go to Turkey. And it really opened my eyes to how blessed we are in this country. You know, in Saudi Arabia, I remember running into some women over there who were in their blacks, you know, scarves up, you know, the only thing you could see were the slit in their eyes and their hands. And I remember walking down an aisle in a store, and there were four or five of these women in their dress, and they literally ran from me. Because, you know, they could not be around, you know, another man, let alone a U.S. serviceman. So, you know, it just opened my eyes to how blessed we are in this country. And, you know, in Turkey, I saw orphans on the street that had nobody, that were just begging for food to try to survive another day. And I'll tell you that slapped me in the face, because, you know, at this time I was going through a little bit of this victim mindset, thinking, woe is me, and why did I have to deal with this? But, you know, I got outside the country and really saw how good I had it. And, you know, here were these kids, they would have killed to trade places with me. And, you know, I'm sitting there feeling like a victim. And I think that's when that victim mindset started to go away. And I started to really appreciate, you know, how blessed I was.
Yeah. It gives you a sense of perspective, right? I mean, you really see where you are in that order and that you may not have had it as bad as we like to tell ourselves we've had it. That perspective is huge. So, now, you know, not giving anything away, but since that time, you've become tremendously successful, right? You have your own business, you authored books and all of that kind of stuff. So I want to get into, once you got out of the Air Force, what kind of propelled you forward into the success that you have now?
Yeah. So I got out of the Air Force and, you know, I got married in the Air Force. So I think having a family definitely helped me. And my wife, you know, definitely kept me on the straight and narrow.
Tell me more about that. So I want to hear more about that. Cause you know, coming from the family that you came from, now you've got your own family.
Yeah.
And keeping, so the sense of who you must be as a father and a husband, you know, and you didn't have any role models to go to kind of rely on for that. Or any kind of support system there. So what was the mindset going into the marriage and starting the family?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest goal in life is I want to be married to my wife for 50 years. And I just have always envisioned having that 50-year, you know, wedding anniversary. And, you know, thankfully, just last week I celebrated, or I guess it's been a couple of weeks, I celebrated my 25th wedding anniversary.
Wow, congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was totally different having a family and having people depend on you. But, you know, I'm married, I get out of the Air Force and I start to go to college to finish that goal. And, you know, it took me another 3 years after getting out. And, but I was able to do that. And what I realized at that time, that's when I became obsessed with goals and personal development. You know, I realized, holy cow, you know, here I am coming from where I came from. And I essentially used a goal, even though I didn't really know what a goal was, to achieve this and become this first person to do this. And then I just became obsessed with it. And then from there on out, I started to really use that in every area of my life because I knew I was in control at that point. And I started to design this life that I wanted to live through goals and personal development. And here I sit, you know, 20 years after being able to graduate, you know, I went into commercial real estate. I became the top salesman worldwide for a top 5 commercial real estate firm, you know, several times. I started more than 10 businesses, including one of the largest privately held pet resorts in the country. And, you know, now, as I said here, I've been able to exit a few businesses and I've gotten to the point in my life where, you know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I don't want to watch waves crash on the shore. And that's when I, you know, kind of determined that I have lived this life for a reason, to inspire and motivate other people. And that's when I started my new business, I Got Smarter, that is a goal fulfillment program that's going to help other people take control of their lives and for them to fulfill their life's biggest goals. And that's what I want to spend the rest of my life doing. And that's what I want my legacy to be.
So, you know, I love that, Nelson, because I'll tell you why, because it really shows how, you know, you were the king at one point. You built that empire, you built your kingdom, you got it together, you started the businesses. And now that you're out of that, it's hero time, right? It's about others. It's about making others fulfill their own goals, their own dreams. And that's really, I want to get into that a little bit here because that's so, so important and a great example to set because, you know, so many, they just keep accumulating, right? And it's still all about me and my kingdom without that giving back part. So tell me about how you're doing this and really what the motivation is on it and what, you know, what you're experiencing from having done it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing is that I know it works. I know what power goals and personal development have. I mean, as I said here, you know, I just turned 49 a couple days ago and,
happy birthday.
You know, I look at, I look at the life that I came from, and my grandfather was 48 when he shot and killed that police officer. My mom, you know, was, you know, 15 when she had, just one generation later, because of one goal, and, you know, which led to other goals, I'm living a drastically different life. And not only am I living a drastically different life, my kids are living a drastic. Goals are not just for the person that achieves them. Goals are generational. And because of those goals, I'm going to live a better life. My kids are going to live a better life, and their kids are going to live a better life. And that's the power that we're dealing with goals and personal development. And that's why, you know, I see so many people out there that are one or two choices away from living a drastically different and better life. And that's what I Got Smarter will do for them, is help them, you know, change the direction of their lives and then actually continue on that journey until they get to the life that they want to live.
Fantastic, man. And that, when you're talking about legacy too, when you talk about the generational, right? It's not just about you. It's about leaving that legacy and letting the generations go down through. So, you know, you said that so many people are just, you know, one or two decisions away. A lot of people don't set very big goals. What do you find as you're, you know, working with these people, and what keeps most of the people from making the decision, number one, set goals, and then another thing is actually achieving their goals?
Well, I think the number one thing is fear. I mean, you know, fear will kill more dreams than failure ever will. And I think that's the number one thing, is people are just afraid to go after their goals. And then, you know, as a matter of sticking to your goals, I mean, I truly believe that you can achieve any goal in life as long as you have enough time, enough energy, and enough focus. So, I mean, I know that's true. I've lived it. And once people believe that, then they'll never be the same. Once you show somebody the potential that lies within them, they'll never be the same. They'll never want to settle for anything less than they can do. And that's what our program does for them. It, you know, I Got Smarter kind of shows them the potential that lies within them, and they show them that it's actual possible. If you don't feel like something's possible, you're not going to work hard at it. But once you realize it is possible and you know that you can do it, it's going to take work, but it's really simple. All you have to do is just keep going.
Yeah. And it's about, you know, it's funny you talk about fear, and, you know, one of the first of the sacred seven is the courage, right? Which is not absence of fear. It's doing something even in the face of fear. And, you know, and as you've experienced, if you can't get the courage to go after your goals, you're not going to move forward. The fear is going to overtake you. It's going to win. And I think the other thing that I'm getting out of what you're saying that I really like is, it's instilling that belief that they can do it, that self-belief that, you know, this can actually happen. You've got it because you've experienced it, right? You've been through there. And I want to make sure we get to this, because this is one of the things, and I think this goes towards that belief. You know, so many of us, and I know I'm speaking for myself too, may have experienced a failure or a defeat, or, you know, some shit happened that really, you know, derailed your goals, or, and you feel like, well, I screwed that up, and so I can't ever do that again, right? I'm done. Like you mentioned earlier, damaged goods, right? But you had a quote that you say is one of your favorite quotes about the scars. You want to?
Yeah, I mean, never be embarrassed of a scar. It just proves that you were stronger than what tried to hurt or kill you.
Yeah, I see. I love that, because it's almost like a badge of honor, right? Oh, yeah. I made it through this. And there's that self-belief that I think is so important when you're setting these goals and moving yourself forward to success. It's not getting into victim, not looking at your scars with shame and saying, well, look, I screwed up. This is what happened to me. Rather it being, hey, man, I lived through this and I can take on even more, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that's me. I mean, this story that I just told you about, you know, my origin story and what my grandfather, I mean, the only person who knew that once I moved away from that small town was my wife. And I told her that before I married her. I figured she had a right to know, but I never told my kids the story. I never told my friends or my in-laws, because it weakened me. But once I kind of got on the back end of it and I realized that I survived it and what I had been able to do, and then I realized, you know what? I lived this life so that I could help others. I started to give that a different meaning. And another one of my favorite concepts that we teach at I Got Smarter is things only have the meaning that you're willing to give them. And what that means is no matter what happens to you in life, you get to assign meaning to it. And if we get to assign meaning, why would we ever assign a negative meaning to anything? And I know there's some horrible things that happen out there. You have to get creative on some things to try to find that silver lining. But if you dig deep enough and you get creative enough, you'll find a good reason. I mean, the things that happened to me as a youth, I give that all good meaning now because I lived through it, and now I'm able to share my story and help other people. So there's a way to find something good in everything, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also propelled you forward. Without having gone through that, you may not have had the real burning motivation and desire to get out of that situation and into the one you're in now.
Oh, without a doubt. And I thank that for that, because I know, you know, would I have this drive to go out there and help other people if I didn't live the life that I did? I don't know that I would. And because of that, I do. And because of that, I have the drive to be a good husband and a good father. Would have I had that if I didn't live through the circumstances I did? I don't think I would have it as strong as I do.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Absolutely. And one thing I want to get to too, before we wrap this is, you know, you mentioned that you told your wife about your circumstance. She was the only one outside of your town that knew. And I love that you did that and were honest with her, because, you know, I want to talk a minute about vulnerability, but coming at vulnerability from a position of strength, from a position of power. Right. So, you know, the first three of the Sacred Seven are courage, honesty, and integrity. They're an incredibly important three. And for you to have the courage to be honest with your wife, you know, knowing, you know, you wanted to marry her and you wanted to build this life with her, and having to tell her where you came from and your origin story, as you say, you know, to do that, have that courage to be honest, because you wanted to live in integrity, right? Not have secrets. Yeah. So I'm assuming, since, you know, you're out doing media, you're doing podcasts and shows like mine, that your kids also know your origin story. So, yeah. You know, and what I want to say in this vulnerability thing is that, you know, it is ultimately in the epitome of the warrior and the lover archetypes, because you have to have that compassion and vulnerability, but it's got to come from that warrior strength, you know, not from the weakness and the victim. So tell me what it was like when you had those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard. I mean, and it was scary, because I had been running from that story. And, you know, in my book, The Unlucky Sperm Club, I tell of some stories where people who knew that story didn't treat me, you know, well, ex-girlfriends and girlfriends' parents and things like that. So it was very vulnerable, but, you know, I loved her, and you know what? I love not having any secrets. I love the fact that my wife can pick up my phone and scroll through everything that's on there, and I don't have to start sweating that she's going to find something that, you know, she would be upset or disappointed in me. And that's the way I want to live my life. I don't want those secrets. I don't want to stress. I don't want to worry about my wife finding something out, or even my kids finding something out. And I talk about that in my book. You know, my last name meant so many different things in the hometown that I was from. You know, when somebody would mention Tressler, you know, eyes would drop and they'd automatically start to, you know, look at you a different way. And now that I'm out, you know, in Vegas, the last name Tressler means something totally different. It means respect and honor. And, you know, I want that for my life. And that's the way I try to live my life. And believe me, I'm not always perfect and I make mistakes, but, you know, I'm doing my best to live that life of integrity and have honest in everything that I do, because the worst thing that could ever happen to me is when I'm dead and gone and my sons talk to somebody and my name gets brought up, that person has something negative to say about me and tells my sons that I wasn't honest or trustworthy.
Yeah. How, you know, I want to get into that too, because you have sons. Is, first of all, what was their reaction when you told them? I don't know how old they were at the time, but what was their reaction? And then what's your relationship like now with them?
Yeah, they only found out whenever I started writing my book, which was maybe 2-3 years ago, and blown away. And they're blown away at the stories that are in my book, realizing that I had lived through that. And I think
How old were they when they found out? So it was a couple of years ago. There.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago. And so I have a 23-year-old. I've got an 18-year-old, and I got a 15-year-old. So
okay, so mid-teens all the way into 20s when they found out, and so they were blown away. Continue on.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, they were blown away, but I think that level of respect was there, realizing because they're living about as polar opposite of a life from mine as they could. And I think they really appreciate where I came from and what that meant for them, and they see all the things that I'm doing for them that wasn't necessarily done for me. And I think a little sense of appreciation comes through.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. And guiding these young men as you wanted to be guided when you were a young man, right?
Yeah. And again, I think because of where I came from, I put that emphasis on, every year I have I have goals, of course, but every year I do a vision board, and every year on there, I put a trophy for the husband of the year, and I put a trophy for the father of the year. Now, I've never won those. And if you talk to my family, deservedly so, but that's always, those are always the two of my top goals. Is I really want to be the best dad that I can be, and I want to be the best husband that I can be, and because of where I came from.
Yeah, I love that. And what I really love overall about the story is just absolutely embracing your past in full, right? Good, yeah. Bad, just embracing all of it and appreciating and honoring everything that's happened to you in your life for making you who you are today.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, that's kind of been the part of the title of my book, The Unlucky Sperm Club, is, because of the circumstances that I was born into, I believe that has as much to do with, the success that I've had in my life than anything. And I wouldn't trade it because it's made me the person that I am. It's given me the contrast in life that I have. And it's really strengthened me because I had to get through that. It's strengthened me to want to live the type of life that I'm trying to live.
Yeah. It is those challenges, brother, that we go through that make us stronger, that the warrior becomes a warrior because of the battles they fought.
Yeah.
Right. It's not on paper. That's in real life and experience and getting into the battle. So absolutely appreciate that. And, I'm personally looking forward to reading the book, The Unlucky Sperm Club. Where can we get I Got Smarter? Is that on the app stores and that kind of thing? And how does that work?
Yeah. So you can go to nelsontressler.com and everything is there. The app is there. And in fact, we're giving away 30 free days of the app, just to try it out and make sure that it's a great fit for you. But the app is on the app store, it's on Apple and Android. So you can get it both there. The book is available anywhere books are sold, but probably Amazon is the easiest place to get it.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to make sure I grab a copy of that. Now, before we go, one last thing you can leave us with. There's one overarching lesson that you've learned or something that you'd want to leave the guys listening today. What would that be?
You know what? We listen to these podcasts and we get fired up and we get inspired and we get motivated and then we do nothing. So what I would say is do something and do it now. I mean, don't wait till Monday. Don't wait till the beginning of the next month. The only place we can ever start is where we're at. So start where you're at and start now. Don't wait for all the traffic lights to turn green before you start on your journey. Do it where you're at and do it now.
And do it now. So that's the important part of that statement from Nelson. Now is always the time to take action. Because as he says throughout the interview, the impact can be generational. It can affect your kids, your grandkids. So do it now. And guys, I got to tell you, Nelson's story just blows me away because, there's so many roads he could have gone down starting out life the way that he did. And, so many people do that. They use that early part of their life as an excuse to, end up where they are in adulthood. But the fact that Nelson was able to make the decision to not play victim and to take command of his life and then create wealth in all areas, and not just financial wealth, but wealth in his relationships with his wife and with his kids, building the family that he built. It's proof that no matter where you are or what you faced or what you're facing right now, that you can overcome anything. And I love that quote. It's like the quote that he mentions. I just love this, where he says, "Never be ashamed of a scar. It just means you are stronger than whatever tried to hurt you." Awesome way to look at everything. So we wear those battle scars proudly. And guys, I want to thank Nelson Tressler for coming on today, for being real and open and honest and telling his story. It's an incredible story. Remember, his book is The Unlucky Sperm Club, and his app is called I Got Smarter, and you can find that at igotsmarter.com. And I want to thank you for listening to Eric Rogel Talks with Warriors, Lovers, Kings, and Heroes today, now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. I'm Eric Rogel, and I'm honored to be with you, to be your brother by your side on your hero's journey. All right, guys, I'll talk to you next time.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.